What's it gonna take to make this all stop now, baby? Till it all burns down, till it all burns down. Listen, mama, know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off a single.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other Live from my hotel room in East Lansing. Recording away. I don't normally record, but hopefully this is working because it would be a shame to lose the whole thing. I am Robert, your host. My guest tonight, today, is the notorious Bob Zupke on Twitter, real name Bob Zupke. He and I had a chat like 4 months ago. When did we talk? Was that like early?
It was right. It was right after the Wisconsin game.
Oh, okay. Well, that was, I'm sure we had lots of pleasant things to say. So, Robert, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I'm going to start with what I just asked you before we press record. I'm going to start since it happened today, or was it yesterday? This is all blur. Rayvon Bonner sees something you tweeted about him and calls you out on Twitter. What were your thoughts on that happening?
Yeah, he called me out in the most like positive way that you could ever possibly call someone out.
Right.
I think he said like, "May God bless you" or something like that.
Yes.
And I said, "Oh, he's our fifth best running back." Yeah, I was surprised because I think I tweeted it months and months and months ago, like, you know, at the beginning of the season or something like that. Once he opted out and said he didn't feel welcome back, so I was surprised to see it resurface. I think he searched his name to find it or something, and.
Yep.
And I never, you know, I never like to play, you know, I never tag players. I never tweet at players or anything like that. But you know, I mean, fair is fair and I got to own up and, you know, I said what I said and, exactly. And he saw it. So it is what it is, but it's just one of those things you hope never happens. And I always cringe every time someone tags a player in, if I say something or tags a coach in or something along those lines.
Yep. That's why I wanted to start with that because it's kind of fun for me to watch somebody else go through it because I've had it happen before. And we can't ever say whatever. We can't ever say Kenyon Sims transferred because he was sixth, maybe seventh running back and he was just never going to play. He just wasn't Big Ten material. That's the truth, right? He's transferring out because he just couldn't find play. But if you say that on Twitter, which is true, you're going to be, you know, you're kind of taking a shot at a kid. So you have to say it a nice way. And when you say things a nice way, then sometimes everybody thinks it's like, well, you'll never say anything bad. Well, you're just a homer. You're just rosy and this and that. So then you find yourself wanting to balance it. It's like, no, here's the truth. And here's the 10 wide receivers in order. And I gave Desmond Dan half of a Tom Cruise because I don't think he'll ever play. Wasn't in on a single down and everything else. But if I put that out on Twitter, Desmond Dan might follow it and might see it. Somebody might send it to him. Someone might tag him in. And then he says, hey, what the hell, man? Why saying this? So it's such an interesting dynamic covering college players or just talking about college players, because that's always going to happen.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, you're closer to it than I am. And I typically don't pull punches and in that case, I don't back down from what I said. I think what I said was the truth. But you know, you never want to make a kid feel bad or anything like that. And Bonner's obviously a good kid and, you know, wish him the best, but, it is what it is. He saw it. I gotta own up to it.
Yeah. It's the whole dynamic is interesting to me because in high school, maybe some Texas, like, high school football reporters would trash a kid or, like, you know, it's like big time. You've got to step up, son. And, you know, but for the most point,
you're
never going to say anything bad about a high school player. On the other side of the ring, in the NFL, you know, if you do not perform in the second half of a game, you'll get trashed on Twitter. I mean, do you see the video with, like, Cam Newton and the kids the other day? Like,
oh god, yeah,
trashing him to his face,
at his own camp. I think
it doesn't take the New York Post to be like, you know, blow you up and blast you. It's just, you know, whatever.
Totally.
You're free to say whatever. So you have high school, nobody says anything. You have professional sports. Everybody will trash you for one bad pass. And somewhere in the middle is talking about college sports on the internet, which is this really, really weird mixture. So it's always fascinating.
Totally.
Yeah. And you're not, totally, I mean, you're doing it under a nom de plume. No?
That's right. Yeah. You know, I don't have to deal with it personally.
But still, you get held to that standard.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's a fine line. I've dealt with it at times before, you know, but probably never as directly as with Rayvon over the weekend. So first time for everything.
I've had parents reach out. I've had like,
oh God.
I had Simon Svijanovic. His dad had reached out to me more than any other parent. It had nothing to do with what eventually happened. It was that I gave his second son, Peter, one Tom Cruise, and he sent me like four different emails, I think, or something like that. I mean, he sent me a you know, printed out, it would be 5 pages, double spaced kind of email, you know, arguing for his
son. You
know? And so it just, you know, it's really hard that, you know, I was a parent of a high school athlete. I would like some freak guy on the internet who rates people with Tom Cruise's giving the lowest rating he's ever given a player. And I'd want to have a son and go after it. But I mean, Peter didn't play and never made it in college football. And the accurate rating was, you know, I think the rating was accurate. So it's just,
I agree. I've had some, you know, like I'll notice sometimes on Twitter, if something will be, it'll like be clear that whoever tweeted it had blocked me. You know, I think that's how I figured out Miles Smith had blocked me. And that's how I figured out some of the other, you know, some of the other people had blocked me. And there have been times where like it'll be a player or it'll be like a player's parent or something like that. And I'm just like, oh man, like I've never had an interaction with them, but they must have, you know, they must have read something like the Bonner tweet and not liked it and blocked me as a result. So it is what it is. But it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the Miles. That's probably a good launching point. Like, I just I don't think anyone on earth maybe defended the Miles Smith hire more than me. Like, I didn't defend it. Like, Bobby can hire whoever he wants, and if it's his son, he can hire his son. He's going to own it. He'll get fired or hired, you know, based on it. You know, it's like he gets to do it. I said the same thing with Ryan Cubitt. I didn't agree with it. And giving him this massive raise, like that's the way to build a college football team. But you're the head coach. You can do whatever you want. Go right ahead. So, like, Miles Smith having me blocked is the craziest. Like, I don't even know the skin I had in the game for those 2 weeks for him. And, I was, you know, too far out there and he didn't, you know, want me seeing anything he said on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, that was that. I think he took to Twitter the way his dad took to staff and, you know, he wanted to have like-minded individuals on the staff. And I mean, I could go on for a couple hours about Miles Smith, but I think I deserve the blocking. You didn't, I probably did deserve it. So I don't blame Miles for that one.
Yep. And so here we are, right? So last time we talked, made the point of, I don't think we can fire anyone. And so we kind of landed on, because of that, you kind of have to root for this season to turn around so that recruiting doesn't fall apart. Because if you can't fire anyone until the end of the 2021 season, you don't want the hole to get deeper. So Illini fans, even though we got blown out by Wisconsin, we should probably pull like crazy for Lovie to win, which didn't happen. And they went 2-6 and he got fired, which surprised me a little bit, but surprised me in the sense they could even afford the buyout and a new contract with a big athletic deficit after the COVID. So what were your thoughts? Were you surprised? I was surprised that they made the move just because I didn't think they could. I knew they would if they could. Yeah. 2-6, obviously he's gone after 5 years, but I was surprised they could do it financially. So what was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of the same way. I mean, I think, you know, at the beginning of the year, I guess one, I didn't think we'd lose in the manner that we lost. And so I thought, you know, even at, like, in worst case scenario, we'd be competitive in most games, and, you know, and then therefore, you know, we point to COVID and as a result, keep Lovey. I look back on, like, the Auburn firing, which I think was, like, the first big one with the massive Gus Malzahn buyout. And I believe that that was kind of the first real big one where it's like, holy hell, what are they doing during COVID? You know, they're spending all this money. And I remember during Whitman's press conference, I think it was announcing Bielema or announced, maybe it was the firing press conference. I can't remember which one, but he cited the fact that, you know, there are X amount of jobs that are out there right now. And our buyout is, you know, 1/10 or whatever the number is, mm-hmm. Compared to those other programs. And I truly think that some of that, like the optics of what Auburn did and the optics of what some of those other programs did almost helped justify what Whitman was able to do. But then, you know, I also think, you know, $2 million in the grand scheme of things or whatever the buyout number was, you know, what they were going to net to lose, maybe it was four. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's a net positive. Whenever you think about just the impact of what keeping Lovey would have done to the program. I mean, you know, even if you could have people in attendance next year, and hopefully we can, there, I don't know if you would have drawn 30,000 people having another Lovey Smith team out there. And you know, you think about that, you just think about the hole you dig with recruiting and, you know, I mean, it goes on and on. So, you know, I mean, ultimately I'm thrilled with where it landed. But I too was shocked.
Yeah. I was surprised like to see Tom Herman's buyout was $16 million at Texas plus his staff. What was it? Another $8 million or something. So like, you know, we were chatting in October at the time of, you know, Iowa, other programs cutting 3, 4, or 5 sports. And
yep,
like you said, the optics of how do you say, yeah, we're just going to throw a bunch of money around at football coaches. And, oh, by the way, these 4 sports are getting cut. So, you know, I guess, you know, we're almost a year through this and no announcements yet of sports being cut. So perhaps we have survived that. But yeah, it's not playing out financially like I thought it would. My theory was how Josh Whitman go in front of the Board of Trustees, which they have to approve it. And how do you say, okay, we're going to spend, you know, $7 million buying out the head coach, all of his assistants, clean house, and we're going to pay a new coach $26 million. And oh, by the way, we're going to have to borrow because we're going to be $35 million in the hole this year. You know, I need to take a class on how college athletics work in the financials outside of it. Yeah, I was really surprised that it was and could be done, especially, you know, look how it plays out. And not that many Power 5 jobs change. There's, you know, like a third of what normally does. So it's just really interesting. So we fire him. We go to Penn State. We have a new coach. What was your initial reaction? And then maybe your current reaction has changed.
Yeah, so – initially, you know, I didn't know a ton about Bielema. I mean, obviously, I was familiar with him from Wisconsin. I mean, I knew he was an Illinois guy. But, you know, and I said this on Twitter, I think he's just the guy that you just despise whenever he's like the player that you hate when he's not on your team, but you love when he's on your team.
Yep.
That's just the impression that I'm getting from him. You know, I thought he was just a pompous kind of, I mean, he just seemed like an asshole from the outside looking in. You know, every time we dealt with him, every time I saw him in press conference, it was just like, oh man, not this guy again. And then I saw the name floated around and my gut was just that, you know, I was like, oh, come on, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you know, I knew he went down to Arkansas, didn't do well there. But I only knew it from afar. You know, I didn't really look at the trajectory of the program or anything like that. And as I dug in, and as it became kind of more plausible that, you know, potentially he could be the guy, I looked at it more closely and kind of, you know, came more on board. And now, I mean, since he's been hired, I don't know if there anything he could have said or done differently that would have like impressed me more than like the first couple months of his tenure. And, you know, I mean, obviously he hasn't lost a game yet. So, you know, that means a lot. The coaches haven't coached yet, but in terms of like, you know, retention of the current players, in terms of hiring a staff, in terms of like just what his vision is, I feel so positively about basically everything he's done, which is rare for me.
Yeah. You and I haven't talked about this. I have my, what I call notes, sticky notes on the bathroom mirror that, you know, that I've mentally set myself up for, you know, Robert, do not buy in, do not jump like you, you know, remind myself every morning, you know, don't do it, don't buy in, you know, I wrote about it as the, in Parks and Rec, when Ron Swanson makes a videotape for himself for anyone to play for him if he tries to get back with his ex-wife, you know, I have those mentally in my head where I've said, take your time with the next coach. Don't think it's fixed. It's happening. So I have all these stop signs, but I mostly agree with you. I do think that there's this, you know, it's just this kind of phenomenon I've noticed among my friends and people I interact with and everything else, that like the depth of lovey hate is directly related to the excitement of Bielema, in the sense that my friends who hated Lovey the most love Bielema the most because he's so opposite, you know? So kind of weird for me that it's not like the negative people are still negative and the positive people are still positive. It's the people who were violently anti-Lovey are the most, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen kind of thing, which is, it's odd to me, but you know, whatever, you know, like it could just be that those people have a really good feel for what things are given what happened to Lovey, and we should be excited about it. But it's just been interesting to me, knowing this football fan base well, to see how Twitter, message boards, everything else, he's been embraced, because at least 2 months in, it's bigger than, well, I mean, Lovey was this flashpoint kind of thing. So, but I know it's bigger than Beckman. It's bigger than the first couple months. I mean, people were unsure because Zook had just been fired. He was kind of like the joke at the time to Florida fans. And so, like, I don't think people were all in on Zook immediately. So this is, I mean, even Ron Turner, nobody was all that crazy. Like, nobody was, like, it was just like, okay, Bears offensive coordinator. All right, well, you know, we do need offense.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I can't recall an excitement like this with a new coach. I mean, there was the Lovey, like, he's going to be the guy. But A, I think this staff can really do it. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is, beyond even the Lovey effect, I mean, it was Kubik before that, Beckman before that, Zook before that. I mean, there's just been incompetence at the head coach position at Illinois for years and years. Yeah. And, you know, I think there were red flags with, I mean, there were red flags with Lovey pretty early on, I think, in terms of like the staff that he assembled. So, you know, even beyond, you know, no like in-game issues or anything like that. I'm just saying the staff he put together, you could say, who's going to recruit? You know, are these guys going to be willing to recruit? They haven't proven that they can.
Yep.
I mean, you go to Beckman and you had the whole Matt Campbell thing, and you know, how much of his success is a direct result of Matt Campbell. You know, he's brought in kind of all these spare parts and tried to put them together with his first staff. And there's all kinds of inexperience at the coordinator positions, all of that. And I mean, you can kind of go down the line, and I think there were some red flags with everyone, and Bielema has his red flags, but I can't remember a staff as balanced, at least on paper, as balanced just from every standpoint that you could possibly think of. It's like Bielema has considered that. And is it going to work? I don't know, but just on paper, the way that it looks right now, I mean, I'm excited about it, 'cause I think, it's something that I haven't seen here in a long time.
Yeah, I would say the only, I mean, in general, the only negatives I've seen around any staff hire is probably just Tony Peterson. Is he
Tony Peterson? Yep.
Yeah. Is he the big time offensive coordinator who can figure out Big Ten defenses, you know, just because he,
yeah,
you know, he hasn't had a Big Ten coordinating job since 06. So that's really, honestly, that's the only, I mean, maybe is Ryan Walters ready to run his own defense? Maybe that's a, you know, a concern,
yeah,
but everything else. And like I've seen you tweet before, like, you know, coordinators at position coach spots and, you know, really smart hires like George McDonald and up and coming guys like Bart Miller, you know, it just seems to really have, you know, it's, you just get, you just get the sense of assembly. And honestly, I mean, Bielema did the same thing when he got to Arkansas. You know, he identified Chris Ash early. He identified Sam Pittman, who is now Arkansas's, you know, coach and all this. Like, he had this staff of all these guys who were really up and coming in college football. And it didn't eventually work, and we can talk about that. But yeah, it's I think there is a competence to all of that makes sense, and all of that fits together really well, and that sticks out after, you know, some years of, okay, well, you know, maybe these guys are hot young coaches, but what does Austin Clark know? What is Jimmy Lindsay? Is he ready? You know, like, we just had a lot of questions over time of what the plan was of, you know, this offense versus that defense, and, you know, heck, go back to Cubitt and Banks and, you know, all the way through of coordinating and how does it all fit. There does seem to be a
totally
a big time plan here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. But I think there's almost like a built-in insurance with, you know, I mean, Peterson, I think I agree. He's probably the biggest question mark. But then you've got George McDonald, who's got coordinator experience. And so, you know, to that extent, there's at least another voice in the room, which was just completely absent on Lovey's staff. You know, and then, you know, you look at defense and you got Bielema, who's a coordinator, Walters, who's a coordinator, Kane, who's been a coordinator, and Andy Boo, who's been a coordinator. I mean, you truly have four voices there of guys who have called plays, of guys who have, you know, seen an RPO before. Yep. And then on the last staff, I mean, it was truly just an echo chamber by design. You know, with a guy steering the ship who hadn't done it in college. And you know, and that was one thing that I advocated for so long, was just bring in one guy who's going to disagree with you, just because get that healthy sort of the healthy dissent that's necessary in the room. And that's what I'm so encouraged by with Bielema. You know, he kind of did it by design, by going out and getting Walters who he hadn't coached with, and getting Peterson who he hadn't coached with. And, you know, I mean, he made a point to talk about that, which I think is just, yeah, I think it's important, especially today.
What are your thoughts on, you know, well, one, Bielema did say he hired Walters and Peterson specifically because he didn't know them, specifically for that dissension. You know, he wanted
two voices
he wasn't familiar with. But I guess, you know, I guess then the thought is like, okay, what's the, like, what do you think this offense is? I'll ask it that way. Like, what, like, you know, they went out and got Max Rosenthal, and so they have a fullback, and I think it's Wisconsin, all at Arkansas, and that's, you know, it's all going to be, you know, 330-pound linemen, and everybody has that thought. But do you think that's where we go? I haven't figured it out yet. Like, I'm going to get out there.
Yeah, well.
Practice. Yeah.
I am interested because, you know, they talk so much about adjusting to the personnel, and that's just, you know, that is just not what we have right now. So, you know, maybe perfect world, maybe it starts to look a lot more like, you know, the Wisconsin of old. And I know, you know, Bielema said it's not necessarily going to be the Wisconsin of old, but just based on the discussions and what we're hearing, I think, you know, you're going to see a lot of two tight ends and like that kind of stuff, and massive O linemen. And so ultimately, and pocket passers. I mean, you look at some of the kids there, they're throwing offers out at quarterback, and a lot of them aren't your, you know, they're not the Isaiah Williams Deuce fans of the world. And they're, you know, they're the more stand back in the pocket, 6'4", 220 pounds. limited mobility. And so I think ultimately it goes in that direction. In the interim, though, I don't really know. I mean, it's a great question, because, you know, for how much they talk about adjusting personnel, I think we're going to have to see something different, because I don't think you can trot out there, and do what I think they'll do in year three or year four and have success with it right away.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see this spring. I mean, you know, yes, so many players have returned, but that doesn't mean they're going to return for the fall. You know,
yep.
I'll call it an Eli Peters situation where, you know, Peters was recruited by Cubitt, came here, went through one lovey spring ball, said, there's no way I can run this offense, and took Toledo before he even got to his first fall. You know, I just feel like once we see what these schemes are, maybe there's a cornerback who says, no, I'm not that. You know, maybe there's offensive players, maybe there's offensive linemen that do the same thing. So, you know, but I saw something on Twitter or something of, Lovey had kept so much of this together and he got so many of the seniors coming back, right? You know, Bielma has kept Lovey's players and has so much coming back. It's impressive that he kept everybody around. I'm curious to see how the staff can convince some of those players to do the same. You know, say Deuce Band looks at this offense, it's like, nope, can't do that. You know, that's not how I run an offense that's not going to take advantage of my mobility, you know. So, yeah, there might be this second phase of transfers, and there might be a second phase of a couple more transfers coming in. So it'll be interesting spring.
I totally agree. Yeah, and I mean, and that doesn't even get to defense, which I think is just another sort of question mark, especially based on, you know, some of Bielema's comments about, you know, switching to 3-4 and wanting the linebackers to stand up or the ends to stand up. And, you know, I mean, you hear all of these things and you look at, you know, Mizzou was fairly multiple and SMU was pretty multiple and, you know, SMU blitzed a lot. And, you know, you just wonder how the various voices in the defensive room, what the defense will look like, because I do think they have some, you know, there's a lot to work with there and a lot of experience running different systems. So that's another one that I'm interested to see where it all shakes out.
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise for me in this whole hiring process and watching Bielma put his staff together, for me, it was his Arkansas tenure, and it keeps kind of growing in my mind in that, you know, I was kind of like you, you know, and heck, Bielma says, you know, I went 12-1 my first season at Arkansas as a 30-something-year-old head coach. I thought I was Vince Lombardi. I had a lot of growing and learning to do. So, you know, we had this idea of him as this cocky guy at Wisconsin who we saw in press conferences and everything else. And then B, kind of what the national media painted him as at Arkansas. And, you know, the kind of, I call it the Burt persona that people on Twitter
that I love.
And
I still I hope that resurfaces.
Yes.
But go on.
So I kind of thought it was flew too close to the sun, wasn't ready, like cocky guy gets humbled kind of thing. And there was some of that. The thing that surprised me when digging into it is, like, how does any coach, like, I was like, I don't care who takes over Arkansas in what was it, 2013 that he started there?
2013.
Yeah. Yep. That stretch for the SEC West with LSU, you know, Texas A&M becomes this power. LSU, obviously, you know, last year won a national title. Alabama, Auburn, like what? So he was 20, I'm doing this from memory. I think he was 29-34. And of the 34 losses, 24 were ranked teams, I think, something like that. I'll look it
I
up.
I saw some. Yeah, it's a ridiculous stat, but I remember seeing something like that.
Just the specific wins and losses, and it was like with these teams where they were, LSU coming up, building toward this national title team. Auburn was probably better 5 years ago than they even are now. They had been to a couple title games and such. Alabama in the height of Saban, even Mississippi State under Mullen, their best stretch ever. Ole Miss under Freeze, their best stretch ever, maybe. What he was facing, I guess I don't know why I never looked at it as, man, if Saban took over Arkansas during those years when Mullen had Mississippi State going and like the entire West is like top 25 material, I don't know who could win, especially coming off, they were kind of like us, that they had a Cubitt-like scenario. Petrino got fired, recruiting fell apart, they had a year of an interim coach, and it's just so hard to come back from, and the players leave and you've lost all the program momentum and everything else. So you've got that, and then got all these ranked teams. It was, I guess I never realized how impossible that task was for him at Arkansas.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and then you look at, by year three, he was 8-5 down there. And I think he, at the end of the year, he rattled off like 7 of 8 games, including wins at like LSU. And there were a couple other like games.
Back-to-back shutouts where they, shutout ranked teams in back-to-back games, like for the first time in SEC history or some stat like that. Yeah.
I mean, I think they went on the road at Ole Miss and on the road at LSU in back-to-back games, back-to-back wins. Wound up going 8-5 in year three, which, Illinois is not Arkansas, but the Big Ten West is not the SEC. And 8-5 is, I'm doing handstands for 8-5. So okay. Cartwheels.
Yep. I don't know how. Yeah. I guess, in that sense, the Big Ten West is stronger now than it was 5 years ago, cause I went out and I compared, how many ranked teams he had to face versus how many ranked teams Illinois faced from 2013 to 2017. And it was something like 24-9 or something like that. So it's like, man, he's going to find it so much easier. The Big Ten West is probably stronger now than it was then, but still it's nowhere close to that. So that then leaves the question of, okay, what's the time frame here? Because it's so interesting with seniors coming back that, as I've written, he's kind of got a chance to take a swing at Lovey's fifth year kind of thing. Don't do it like that. Do it like this. He has a chance to, I've quoted the stat 20 times that, Illinois was 12th in returning production last year. The 11 teams in front of them all got better, some to the tune of 6-7 wins better than the year before. The 12th team on the returning production list went from 6-6 bowl season with 4 Big Ten wins to 2-6. And so, for that season to fall apart with all the experience, but then you get a fair number of those players back. Do you see an opportunity for, maybe a surprising first season, maybe like Brohm at Purdue kind of thing, before the real rebuild begins?
Yeah, I still tend to think maybe 500 at best. Just all the moving pieces. I mean, you're implementing new systems. I don't even know what I'm kind of with you in that. Like, I'd like to see the roster in the fall and see what it actually looks like compared to the roster in the spring, because it could look very different.
Yep.
You've got a ton of experience, but a lot of other, teams kind of return some super seniors and return some seniors and, players that might not otherwise have returned. So I don't know. I still just tend to think you're going to have a lot of carryover, from last year. And, I think if he goes 500, I think that to me would be, a positive. But, you know, hopefully I'm wrong. I mean, if you return, you know, four of your five offensive line starters or, you know, we should be pretty good there. You got Peters back, another year with Williams. And then, you know, quite a bit of the defense back as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Cause I think it'll even more light on, you know, what's happened the last, you know, few years here. But I expect, you know, best case scenario around 500.
Yeah. Okay. Let's,
where are you at? Where are you? I know you do the, you don't give any predictions or anything, but where are you at on the, where are you at in terms of, what's a positive for you next year?
It's such a cop out that I say that. It's such a total cop out. like the first thought that comes to my brain is like, well, let's see the roster after spring ball. And, you know, I always want to push it and kick it down the road until I have to say something.
Yeah.
I was so dug into experience means wins. I don't care if it's this or that. Experience in college football has always meant wins. That I see the two lines with all the seniors returning as this, that gives us a chance to surprise. You know, if we look at the years when Illinois football failed early or even was in a long stretch of bad, it was typically this offensive line can't move anybody out of the way, or this defensive line is falling backwards at the snap. They're getting 7 yards every carry. Why would they ever throw the ball? You know, that kind of if you just don't have line play to hold up, game's over. Like, I don't care. You know, it's just so easy at that point if you cannot stand toe-to-toe at the line. So because of all these seniors coming back on both lines, I feel like the potential is there to win. Now, there's also, you know, you got to remember, I saw the other day, I think it was Ralph Cooper tweeting something about, I think it was 2012 or something like that. Anyway, I just saw a discussion of how players like halfway through a season are like, I don't think we even know what's happening right now. Like, where you just kind of lose the locker room, and it's like, you know, like keeping that focus and keeping the understanding of what we do and building that muscle memory is just so important in college football, which is why, yep. You know, Saban's first year at Louisiana or at Alabama, they lose to Louisiana Monroe. They go 6-6, you know, there's confusion. There's always penalties. There's always turnovers. It's just not a machine yet, you know? So that always happens in year one. And so I'm trying to balance basically that, which is year ones never work. They just get it through, versus something like Brom at Purdue, which is, well, yeah, Hazel was bad, but Brom took over his team that was kind of peaking at the right time. And you know, it wasn't much, but it was going to be decent. And maybe you can go 6-6 or win 7 games the first few years while you're trying to recruit and trying to do it. So that's kind of where I'm at, as I keep this eye on, man, the line play should be there. Shouldn't be, you know, line play won't be 2012. It won't be 2005. It won't be, you know, 03 when it's just, you know, starting to fall apart as you lose all those guys to the NFL. So, I think there's some hope based on 23-year-old guys all over on the offensive and defensive line.
Yep.
Okay. Agreed. So we got to talk about the sport that's probably, the sport that's number 5 in the country right now. at some point on any podcast, even the hardest football fans right now are like, it's February, we're number 5. We're chasing a 1 seed. Stop talking about football. We got plenty of time to worry that way. So let's switch to basketball. Just give me your general feeling, thoughts. Like, where are you at as a fan right now with this team?
I mean, I think if we play well, I think we can beat anyone in the country. I think it's been, you know, 15 years or whatever since I've thought that. I think Io's maybe the best Illini ever. I'm like prepared to say that at this point in terms of the impact that he's had this year. I don't know if there's anyone that's ever had that impact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think, you know, we weren't playing well for a stretch there. You know, you think about the Maryland game and the Ohio State game, and even like some of those, you know, the kinks that were very evident during the Mizzou game. And it's starting to feel like some of those are being worked out a bit. I know we played Northwestern close and we played Nebraska close, but they just find a way to win. And, you know, I think all, you know, at the end of the day, we've got Io and they don't. And that's kind of how I feel about every game that we go into. I'm cautiously optimistic. But, you know, I think it's been a while since I feel confident going toe to toe with about pretty much anyone that we get.
Yep. Let's start there then. Let's start. Well, let's just go Rushmore then. Like, if you're prepared to say Io is the best Illini ever, let's talk those guys. Let's build a Rushmore. We'll say Io's on there.
All right.
So, and yeah. we're gonna set it in Rushmore terms of there could be a Teddy Roosevelt on, you know, like we'll set it in Rushmore terms of like it doesn't have to be statistically the four best players or these teams were the best teams. It's Rushmore terms. Who are the four icons or whatever? So who else are you putting? Well, are you putting D or Darren or both? Who are you putting from the 05 team?
Yeah, so I this is tough because I think in terms of – I think, you know, D was so much the face of that team that, you know, he gets obviously a lot of the credit and deservedly so. Darren was just so good, though. I mean, D was great too, but I would probably go Darren on that over D. Just in terms of, because I still think Darren, you know, every bit as much as D. I think he was the better player. So I'd probably go Darren on that from 05.
Mm-hmm.
And then 89, I mean, you could kind of run into the same type of issue with 89.
Anderson's the best player. Kendall Gill was the D Brown that was there 4 years and was the superstar the next year, first team All American, and Kenny Battle was the face and was the, you know, I was a 16-year-old kid and I, you know, all I wanted was a Kenny Battle jersey or a Kenny Battle t-shirt, or, you know, drove to the mall to get my Battle to Seattle shirt. So you know, like yeah, it's really hard to say like who's that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, it's almost like, you know, I think people will point to the fact that Kofi's on this team and say, you know, well, he's got another NBA player with him. And like, you know, does that at all detract from what he's doing right now? But the fact that we're agonizing over D versus Darren and we're, mm-hmm. you know, and Battle versus Anderson yep. versus Gill and all of that. And no one has any question, okay. Io versus Kofi. I mean, it's not even a question. And which I think just, you know, which says a lot. And the other thing that I think, you know, just about, I think sports fans in general have this like nostalgia, this like built in, you know, what Jordan did was more impressive than what LeBron did and what, you know, what Mantle did is better than what Trout's done. And they, you know, you just get into like those types of debates. And where we look back on things that happened and in retrospect, I think we kind of put them on a pedestal whenever we didn't necessarily enjoy them while we're watching them live. And, you know, I mean, I look back to 05 and everyone pointed back to 89 during that whole season and who's going to guard Nick Anderson on this 05 team. And, you know, 89 was better. And I mean, there was a lot of that conversation that happened during 05. And I feel like right now there's some of that going on with Io in terms of like, I don't think we understand how great he truly is right now. No matter how to talk about it, I think we'll look back in 20 years and just be like, I've never felt more confident about a single player at the University of Illinois than I feel about Io, you know, in 2021.
Interesting. Yeah. I in those terms, the only player I can think that comes close, the only player that falls under the, oh, we're okay, we've got him kind of thing, to me was Frank. And that's 01 and 02, when he was like, God, this is so bad to say out loud. The other night I went looking back through Twitter, just searching for IO plus a few keywords, just to find people, you know, when he'd have a 13 point game saying stuff like, you know, he's just not the superstar we thought he was, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Because there's always that. There was so much of that with Frank. You know, even from Billy Packer calling him a dog, you know, like, there was so much like from Frank of, sometimes you're so good or you're so, you make it look easy that people maybe question you. I don't know how to say it, but there's always that sports figure that is better than you realize, because when you're watching, you get lulled into this, why isn't he doing anything? Because you know at times he can do what he did at the end of the Nebraska game and just completely take over. And no player in the history of sports, Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, nobody ever like has this, oh, if he can do that, he'll just do it every single night. But, you know, yeah, for a player to get into that realm of having that fan lash out with, why isn't he doing it right now? He's overrated, all that, is almost this marker that says, wow, he must be really, really special, you know? And so, you know, for me personally, I'm going to have Frank Williams on my Rushmore just because of what he was. You know, Brian Cook was maybe the better basketball player at the time. Like, you know, Cook had 20 points a game in 03, but you know, Frank was always just this. He makes it look so easy. He can make plays that no one else had made in 15 years in Champaign. And yeah, that was that. So if I'm putting IO on there, I'm probably adding Frank to, let me see. My Teddy Roosevelt is probably going to be Kenny Battle. I think that's how I would do it. I would go Kenny Battle, just because he was the face of everything. And then I'm going Frank, Darren, IO. There's my four.
All right.
And you're going.
Yeah, you go Battle. I'd go IO, Darren. I mean, I loved Frank. It's hard for me to. I think I would have been interested to have seen what Frank on with Illini Twitter and like what would have happened. Yeah. If Illini Twitter was around when Frank was playing, because I think, I mean, to your point, I think we hang on like the minute by minute of every single game. And I, you know, if IO goes 6 minutes without scoring, everyone's freaking out about that, myself included. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone else, but I think if you look back then on the tenure of Frank, no one remembers, you know, the 7 minute stretch against Kansas in the Elite Eight where he didn't score or anything like that. It's you just remember it as a whole. And I think that's what we'll do with IO. So I'd go IO, Darren. I mean, in terms of just like impact as a player at Illinois, probably Nick Anderson. And I'm not at, you know, and I mean, Eddie Johnson, like I don't remember Eddie Johnson, obviously, like that predated me. So I don't know. I can't speak to that. Can't speak to like Derek Harper. So for a fourth, man, I'd struggle coming up with a fourth.
You should just go old.
I mean, do you go Dave
Downey or some Skip?
yeah, Johnny Red Kerr.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle because, yeah, it's hard for me to put D above a guy like Battle or, you know, some of the other 89 players.
You can have your.
It's hard to skip over Frank too, because that was still, you know, I mean, they were a game away from reaching the Final Four, and then we probably talk about those teams the way that we talk about 89 and 2005, and that was Frank. So,
people ask me who's my favorite Illini basketball player. It's Ken Norman. Like that's 87 is when I became like. That's when I'm deciding, you know what, I am absolutely going to University of Illinois. This is all I want to do with my life. You know, that Austin Peay loss was as devastating as anything possibly could be. But Ken Norman, Snake that year was, you know, college basketball was a different game. But, like, in terms of we're down six, we need to score. I'm not sure there was ever a player that was more like, God, how do we lead by four already than Ken Norman? His ability to score from 12 feet in, like, I just, like, it's just so vivid in my memory that I just can't, you know, we talk about players who average 20 points a game. I mean, he was up there in 87, I think 20.5 points per game or something like that. Like, you know, as far as favorites go, I probably can't put him on Rushmore, and a lot of that's due to the Austin Peay loss, but 87 Norman was so good. So, yeah, it's just, yeah. So, I mean, the best thing is talking about this, right? Like, the best thing is having this debate that we can talk about these things again. It's been so long.
Yeah. So. No, I agree. And I guess one thing on the Austin Peay thing, I guess, how much does this upcoming NCAA tournament to you dictate Io's legacy?
I mean, it has to, just because of that. I mean, as I always say, in 87, the 10 seed Providence won that region. And when the seeds came out, I can't remember who the one seed was, but everybody's like, oh, that's a weak region. Like, one and two were pretty weak as far as, like, oh, those teams are susceptible. So there were so many brackets that had three seed Illinois winning that regional. And so, I to this day say, if Norman's shot would have gone down at the end of that game, Illinois goes to the Final Four. Look, I believe they would have rolled everybody else. It was just that one game and the shot didn't fall. I'll say this, like, I started a post the other day, and I haven't found the strength to finish it yet. I kind of want to go through the shots Io has missed, just so we can balance all of this. He makes every shot ever at the end of games, because it's going to happen again. I'll say it. It's going to happen in the next probably four games, that there will be a shot near the end of the game. I don't care if it's the tie or win, or it's just a big shot that he's going to miss. Nobody makes 100% of shots. You know, ESPN stats info did that whole, like, he's made 12 of 18 shots this year in the final 90 seconds or whatever. You know, yes, he's clutch, and yes, he is. But any of the player, any of the NBA players I listed earlier, all miss shots. Nobody makes 100% of shots. Like, you know, so I just wanted to do this post out there. I'm like, okay, let's remember here, against Maryland, he had a three to send it to overtime and he missed it. Okay. It's fine.
Yep.
All right. Against Michigan State last year, he turned his ankle and didn't get the shot off because there was sweat on the floor. It happens. Yep. Okay. Like, let's just all remember,
Miami
doesn't make every shot, and it's not going to be devastating if he doesn't make the next shot, because he has made so many freaking shots that it matters. Like, you know, let's just balance this out and say this is exceptional, even though he missed this shot, and this shot, because I just feel like we're getting so out there now with, like, this, that when he misses a shot in the Big Ten semifinals or whatever it is, it's going to be like, oh, how everything falls. How did that one not? And this, that's an aside. Okay. This is just like my own personal, like, I see all these videos and it's like, let's just balance this with, you know, so I'm going to be like an Io last shot truther or something like that. So, that said, yes, the NCAA tournament is going to determine where eventually his legacy is. And to me, that says Elite Eight, because Elite Eight puts you in the 84, 89, 01, 05 realm. Okay. You know, that's what matters in the end. 84, they lost to Kentucky. Yes, it was a travel at the end of the game. 89, they beat Syracuse and went to the Final Four. 01, they lost to Arizona in the 46 fouls that Luke Olson personally got the refs to call. 05, the Arizona comeback. So to me, it's putting a game into that conversation. Ken Norman couldn't do it in 87. I mean, even go to 02, you know, couldn't win the Sweet 16 game. You know, there's other examples here, other chances for players to get into that Elite Eight conversation. So to me, that's kind of the get to that point and everything accomplished this year isn't at all peeled away from like an 87 Ken Norman.
Yep. Yep. No, I mean, I think that's fair. I think everyone's going to look to it. And, you know, my fear is like he puts up 26 and we lose by two in the Sweet 16 or something like that. And it's like,
right.
I'm hopeful.
Yep. I mean, it's a little scary because of Ohio, Nebraska, Northwestern, you know, all these games of playing down the competition. I mean, you got to throw Maryland in there or even at Rutgers where you're playing right at the competition's level. And then it becomes, do you pull it out at the end or do they pull it out at the end? Missouri, put that one in there. There's another game. Here's the truther again. Okay, let's remember that Iowa had a 3 against Missouri to tie and put up a running something, trying to draw a foul kind of shot.
Yep.
You know, let's just remember that not everybody makes every shot, and we've had a good balance, and it's not that, you know, when it happens again, it doesn't mean the devastating things people are going to mean to me. I got to stop talking about that. So yes, Elite Eight. The worry getting to the Elite Eight is, are some of these games that we're playing at Nebraska against Northwestern at home, are they telling us that this team might have one of those round of 32 games where they're playing right at the seven seeds level kind of thing?
Yep. Yep. That's the concern for me. You know, they've come out flat and it's still happening fairly late. You know, and I think whenever we saw it early, it was like, well, they'll get past it. But man, like if they're playing well, that I just don't, I mean, maybe Gonzaga and Baylor and Michigan are the three teams that, you know, can like sustain that kind of blow. Like if we play like we played against Minnesota,
I think those three.
I mean, those three teams are the only ones that I think could counterpunch in any sort of meaningful way. And even then, I think, you know, I don't know if they can.
Yeah, even then, I don't know if Michigan can, just because
I
mean, yes, their game against Ohio State, very impressive, but we just still haven't seen them, like, weather some long stretch of storms. Baylor was really impressive in person. Like their strength was just so like it was just, you know, even like rebounding is a thing that sticks out in my memory from that game. Like, you know, like usually we see DeMonte just, you know, well positioned. And if Kofi's not getting the rebound, DeMonte's, you know, Baylor's guys were just all over everything. You know, a team like that could really give Illinois problems, just take away all the little things, kind of things like that. But yeah, you're right. I don't see play like that. I mean, that stretch, I don't know if I've ever seen the like first half of Gonzaga at the Wooden Classic or whatever in 04 was the moment we were all like, holy crap, this team isn't just good. Like this team is like epically good. You know, John Wooden even said it after the game of like, what kind of team is this? Like, this team is a monster. So yeah, that stretch in the start of the second half in Minnesota, like I don't make sounds. I can't make sounds in the press box in press row, but I was just I can't remember feeling like that. That was so impressive.
I would like, you know, look down to text someone and then it's like, you know, the Kofi dunk. And then you like look down to your phone to send a text to someone about it. And then Adam Miller's doing the same thing the next time down. And then
yep.
Georgie's doing the next thing. You know, it was just nonstop. And I think I tweeted out during the game that it reminded me of that Gonzaga game. Because that, I mean, to your point, I haven't felt like that type of, you know, we are dominant. We can, you know, we can beat anyone in the country since then, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I was seated in a row. So we're like 10 feet apart in press row, but I was seated in a row with two Minnesota reporters. And then in the row in front of me, I think was the AP guy and two other Minnesota reporters. And all five, six of them over there were just reaching this point of like, what am I watching? Like, you know, we sat in the and watched Minnesota beat Iowa, beat Michigan, beat Ohio State. And they were, you know, it's not like they were pulling for the team. They were just in this like, good Lord, like what is happening? Like, this Minnesota's not that bad of a team. This is a high school team playing a junior high team. You know, I even tried to write the sounds that they were making. Like one of the guys was just like he just kept exclaiming, like, good freaking Lord, what just happened? You know, so it's like,
yeah,
as far as watching these games from press row, I don't think it gets more exciting than that. That the opposing media are in this total slack jaw, like, what am I watching right now? This is insane. You know, it's just so
your team do that. I will like actively seek out sometimes just like the neutral observer's opinion, just because I find that stuff interesting, you know, and I always wonder kind of what if I'm just blinded by the fact that, you know, by loyalty or, you know, whatever it might be. And I'll search on Twitter like during a game, during a stretch like that, just to see what the people who are watching the game and don't have a rooting interest are saying. And that was like one of the more interesting I've ever seen of like, just holy hell, like who are these guys? You know, and like the praise for Io and, you know, and Kofi and everyone else. And yeah, I love that stuff. I love seeing the guy. I think you hear it sort of, I mean, it's just like, you know, how are these guys not, you know, how are these guys like not on par with Baylor and Gonzaga? And you know, and so to see that, it just like gives me more hope.
Yep. So yeah, so now this stretch here. So this week is Michigan State, Nebraska, and then the closing stretch at Wisconsin, at Michigan, at Ohio State.
Yep.
I'd like to think, you know, I said I kind of expected. Well, maybe two. You hope we're 3-0 over these three games, right? You hope you go to Minnesota, win, you go to Michigan State and win, and you beat Nebraska at home. I could see a loss tomorrow night. Like, I could see there's going to be an off game, Michigan State playing a little better, you know. I hope not, because I really want to go into that last three of like, okay, this is, you know, this is, as I tweeted, you know, this is settle all family business. Like, you know, there's this opportunity at the end of the year to really exert dominance. So it's going to be interesting. Like a loss tomorrow night would probably end any talk of winning the Big Ten, because you don't think, you know, Michigan only playing 17, that's, you know, you probably not them only having one loss. But to be able to go into next weekend saying, okay, we got three games in 8 days, and you know, we can put ourselves firmly in the one seed line.
One seed.
With playing these games. So if you had to guess right now, if you had to bet, what seed you think this team ends up at?
I'd guess two. Yeah. 'Cause I think you know, I think I would be elated about 4-1 over the next five. You know, I think you have a loss at either Ohio State or Michigan. I mean, you go the next three, you split with Michigan and Ohio State both on the road. I mean, I think that's about all you can ask for. And I think that, you know, I think like a 4-1 would get you, you know, a 2 or a 1, I guess, realistically. But I think 3-2 over the next five is probably more realistic. And maybe I'm being pessimistic, but I just see this team playing into the competition too much to just like roll through, you know, these next three games unscathed.
Yep. I think I have this other, I don't know, I can't call it a theory. Like the way I view basketball is that, you know, sometimes, yeah, you're playing the level of competition. Sometimes, you know, it feels like we've been very fortunate, except for Maryland. We've been fortunate to have our bad games against bad teams. Like, you know, you're going to have off sluggish night like the Northwestern game, and, you know, suddenly your 15-point lead goes to 1. You're just going to have moments like that in every season. And if you had done that against Purdue at home, you probably lost that game. But thankfully, when you played that way, you were playing against Northwestern. You're going to have that road, sleepy, snowy Friday night in Lincoln, Nebraska, where nothing goes right. And thankfully, it happened in Lincoln, Nebraska, and not anywhere else, because literally the 13 other Big Ten teams would have won that game, and Nebraska didn't. So, you know, there's this like way to navigate a season where, you know, you just are kind of fortunate that you're going to have five pretty bad games. And if you have those bad games against middle to lower tier teams, you can pull them out. You just don't want, you can't afford to do it against the really good team. So, you know, in that sense, like this, we've been pretty fortunate this year that when we did play sleepy and bad and have that, I always refer it to as the Varsity Blues loss, to where have you seen Varsity Blues?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. You know, the scene where they were out all night and then the next game they play very sluggish. You know, every team has that really bad sluggish game. We're going to have in the next eight games, we're going to have one of those games. We're going to have a sluggish, nothing's going right. Michigan football against Illinois in 1992, they fumble 8 times, even though they're number 3, and we tie the game because of 8 fumbles. You know, everybody's going to have that moment where you play really bad against the bad team. I just want it to be Nebraska on Thursday. Like, if it's Nebraska on Thursday, play really bad, I'm going to like encouraged if we beat Nebraska by 6. It'll be like, okay, got that out of the way. Now we're ready
to roll. Out of the way.
So I'm hoping that that kind of that wave continues to where, you know, we play our best when we're getting into these big games. So
I totally agree.
Biggest concern going into Big Ten tournament, and, you know, say we even go 2-3 to close out here, don't win the Big Ten, and we end up on the 3 seed line, you know, before the season, everyone would be 3 seed, no question, anything else. So you're a 3 seed, you go into the tournament. What's your concern with this team? Is it 2 quick fouls on Kofi in a game? Is it too reliant on Io? Is it we're taking a nap and the other team does a 11-0 run? What's your concern?
For how good Kofi is, I think the team is still incredibly reliant on Io in a lot of ways. And, you know, and I think there are times where if Frazier's not hitting shots or, you know, Kofi picks up a couple fouls, I mean, everyone just turns and looks at Io. And there have been teams that have found ways to sort of counter that in a pretty effective way. And I think that's my concern is, you know, we become too reliant on Io. It's not Io's night, and the rest of the team just isn't prepared to be a really good team without Io. I mean, that's kind of where I, that's, that's what I see happening. And I think what that looks like then is, hey, we're playing to the level of our competition. I think that ultimately would be the takeaway. Iowa didn't have a great game, blah, blah, blah. When in reality, I think it's just the lack of other guys stepping up and our inability to, sometimes we go away from Kofi for too long, or, they double Kofi and he can't pass out of the post or whatever that is. And we just, it turns into the IO show. And to your point, I mean, I think one of these days he's due for it not to be his night. And that's what I worry about.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. I got a text the other night from Tim Clary, former Illini football walk-on turned scholarship yep. player, tight end Tim Clary. He was talking basketball, and he was asking, our discussion turned to who's the number three guy, who's the clear number three guy. And I want to say Trent, because Trent has been on this a bit of a heater, 6-7 games. But it's I wouldn't have answered Trent 7 games ago. So if you're filling out some card and it says, okay, well, name the top three Illini options. Obviously, one is IO and two is Kofi. Who's the number three guy? Do you think it's Trent? Is it Adam Miller?
I think right now it's got to be Trent. I think seven games ago, I probably would have said Curbelo. In terms of impacting a game, and he's not going to hit a shot. He's not going to hit any threes for you. He's not going to be the guy that you have taken the last shot or anything like that. But in terms of value, I mean, we were literally in the wait till Curbelo comes into the game to start chipping away at this lead that the other team's built in the first four or 5 minutes. And I don't think there's another. I don't think when Curbelo was on and whenever he was that guy, and he's kind of been in a funk lately, but I don't think there's another guy on the team that's capable of that type of impact. Even if Trent's taking shots, I still think Curbelo, kind of peak Curbelo, is number three. But right now he's just, he's going through that freshman funk. And so I'd go Frazier three, and then I'd probably keep Curbelo four just because I know what he's capable of.
Yeah. That's interesting. After the, what I'll call the Illini classic, the three games at home with Thanksgiving or whatever. And even maybe into the early, even Baylor Duke, Adam Miller was wow, this guy can score and he's the purest shooter and everything. But so it's almost like first seven games, Adam Miller, next seven games, Curbelo, and last seven games, Trent. I don't think we've ever really looked. I mean, well, DeMonte is hitting his threes, but he's not going to be the third offensive option. It's not going to be Georgie.
No.
Grandison's had his little moments here, which have been great, but he's not going to be the guy. Probably it is those three guys. And you're right. Yeah, it's so weird. Curbelo, 10 games ago, it was violently angry Illinois fans asking why Curbelo isn't starting. And 10 games later, I don't think a single person has brought it up in a while. Been in this funk and now we're, this and that. So, okay, well then if it's 7-7-7, then who's going to be the guy for the next 7 games?
The next 7? I mean, maybe last game was the start of the Grandison run. I mean, he was pretty solid. I would too. I mean, But I think that Curbelo is going to snap out of it. I just think he's too good of a player. And, I think so much of what he does is teachable. So many of the mistakes, that I think eventually it's just the message is going to get through to him and he's going to learn how to play kind of within himself. And I think then we get the old Andre back and hopefully in time for the tournament.
Yeah, Tyler was covering the Wisconsin game, and he told me afterwards that he saw Underwood light into Curbelo like Underwood hasn't lit into anybody, in 2 years kind of thing. I think Underwood's pretty smart about it in that he knows kind of how kids tick and when to tear them down like a drill sergeant and when to build them up. And all that kind of thing. And so I think we may be seeing a little of that with Curbelo, that he's, you know, shaping him right now, maybe, like he's done with players in the past, of, you know, maybe some of the questioning he's doing himself on the court is, you know, all part of that process that Underwood has him going through. But you're right. In the tournament, you're going to need that sixth man spark. You're going to need that moment where it's like, okay, well, then we turn to, you know, we flipped it and we went with a backcourt of these guys, and Curbelo was on fire and he had his little step back fadeaway moonshot working, and you know, the 6-point lead was cut to one, kind of thing. So yeah.
I just think a team, you know, if we're forced to play in a half court set and you have good Curbelo, like he is as valuable as anyone that we have in some of those sets. I mean, you know, he's the guy that can get to the middle of the defense. He's the guy that can dribble past someone. I mean, to me, he just initiates the half court offense when he's on. And, you know, I think that's something that someone like Frazier just can't give you. And so I just have to tell you, Curbelo, I put him 4 now. I would have had him at 3 before. And I think he could quickly get back to 3 if he gets right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm interested to see it also, you know, we don't talk about it, but I wonder if there's a next level Adam Miller here that's more than just, you know, that dunk was a little bit of, you know, I saw people tweeting like, wait, Miller has that part to his game as well. Like, you know, you've kind of just like
Seen the videos?
Yeah. And so we've kind of just said, oh, well, I know he's the spot up 3 guy who occasionally drives. But, you know, what if you get some game where Adam Miller gets to the line 11 times? You know, what if you get some, you know, something like that of like, wait, he's a muscular scorer who can, you know, you can, you know, next year he's probably getting the ball in crunch time. You know, it's Curbelo setting something up, but, you know, Miller might be your number one offensive threat. So I wonder if there's a next level Adam Miller that we start to see. You know, Trent's been on this hot streak, but it'll be.
No, I mean, that could be. I remember Roger Powell went on in some run. I think maybe was Roger Powell a freshman or something, and like Big Ten tournament time, he just kind of turned it on. I remember he had some run like that where it was kind of out of nowhere. And then he was like a major contributor during a Big Ten. I think it was a Big Ten tournament run.
I mean, his same freshman year. Mike Davis, like all of a sudden Mike Davis was this rebounding machine and so many offensive putbacks and everything else. And it was like, whoa, like just sudden light bulb. Where did this come from? So, so yeah, that would be huge. And, you know, you'd love to even see, I'd love to know there's that ninth guy. You know, I would love Hawkins to have, you know, I'd love a game. Remember Tevin Jones against Maryland, like suddenly, what, you know, like just kind of out of nowhere. I'd love to see Coleman Hawkins get some like 16-point game kind of thing, where it's just like, oh, just like another bag, you know, another thing in the bag of tricks that you can sometimes, you're going to get this stretch four who's, you know, gets them to really chase him on the 3-point line to the point where he can blow by some guy and dunk at some point, you know? So, you know, I that would be great to see in these next 5 games, just a little spark. Cause I mean, the way Underwood talks about him, he's like, this kid's a future star in Champaign. Nobody understands how good he is. And, you know, when he's a senior, watch out. So, it'd be interesting to watch.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk expectations. We're not going to do any predictions. Do you think they get to the Final Four? I don't want to mention those things, but. Like, is your line at the Sweet 16? Like, you think if they get to the Sweet 16, that's where I'm happy, and then a chance at the Elite Eight? Or is it
I think you got to go Elite Eight. Yeah, I think you got to go Elite. I mean, whenever you think about what we're bringing back next year, and I don't even want to get into that, but you just think about like the stars aligning and Io returning and Kofi coming back and you know, how I mean, it all pointed to this year. And so, you know, for me, I think it's got to be Elite Eight or bust at this point. It, you know, just because I think we'll always look back on, like, you know, how did we have Kofi and Io? And, you know, Io's played in the league for 9 years and Kofi's played in the league for, you know, played significant minutes for 8 seasons or whatever. And we look back and we think, man, we had both those guys and we didn't get past the Sweet 16. So to me, I am very much Elite Eight or bust.
Interesting. I said before the season that 16 was my, like, just the first, second weekend in 21 years is really important to me. Get to there, and then can you put yourself in the stratosphere? You know, can you put yourself in the big five with 84, 89, 01, and 05? Or are you going to, you know, fall short of that in the Sweet 16? So my bar is the Sweet 16 for being happy with the season, but I think you're right. The way it's gone, to climb to number five, what we saw against Minnesota, Io in contention for player of the year, Kofi, you know, so many people last year talk about Kofi. He's like, well, he's not a guy who's going to get a lot better. We've seen what his ceiling, you know, he's gotten better. Yeah. Like that drop step.
Oh yeah.
You know, the dunks, you know, like once he figured out he can just dunk everything, you know, just it's insanity. And then, you know, some of these oops and the one-handed dunk on Saturday, like he has taken his game up. And
yeah, yeah.
With all that.
I think there was like a Georgia Tech game where Myers Leonard like just dominated, like got the ball, you know, every single time he had the ball, he was scoring. I remember it stuck out because I was like, he looks like a first round draft pick here. I think it was Georgia Tech. We didn't really see much of that again, just like in the manner that he dominated. And I felt that way with Kofi like 10 times this year, where it's like, you know, this is an NBA move. Like, I don't understand, you know, I'm not an NBA guy. I don't claim to be, or don't claim to like have it, but I'm just like, how does a team not like want this guy? You know, just given they haven't played basketball that long. And like, you look at, you know, now that he's starting to get a little bit more polished, he just continues to get better. So yeah, I'm very much Elite Eight or bust at this point.
Man, you're right. Like, we would look back years later and be like, we had that Kofi and that Io, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah. You
know, it would be hard to live with this being, you know, 03, let alone this being a, you know, if this was an 87, it would, you know, I can't even think about it.
Yeah. Well, you just look every year, you look at the teams that just like luck their way into the Sweet 16. And, you know, they're just, it's just like, they don't even belong here. They're a Sweet 16 team though. And, you know, and like they achieved what our best team in 15 years has achieved. And so to me, like that wouldn't be, I don't know, that one wouldn't sit well. So I'm hopeful, you know, that we're at least Elite Eight. And then, you know, after that, I think anything after that, you got to live with and be happy with.
Well, let's close with this. I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, I think the thing that makes Io stand out so much for me is the way he, okay. So he gets up and says, at his Nike store press conference in 2017, like, I want to bring Illinois back to prominence. And I get this feeling of like, that's a lot. Are you sure, kid? Like, you understand how far we fall, you know? And then, you know, he gets up after his freshman year and says, we have unfinished business. And he starts a hashtag and you know, all this stuff. And I have the same, like, you know, and then he delivers. And then he gets up this summer and he does a video where he says, you know, I got to get that national championship. And I'm like, oh, good Lord. Like, what are you, you know, I cannot recall an Illinois athlete delivering on words like Io. Like, I cannot, like, I mean, he got up and said the boldest possible words and he's in the conversation of player of the year in the NCAA basketball. Like, I just cannot call a athlete, football, basketball, baseball, golf. Like, I don't care. Like, tennis, maybe Kevin Anderson said things like this, but like, you know, in my lifetime of following all sports, I cannot, you know, these are called shots. These are, I'm going to bring Illinois back to prominence. Yep. I'm going to return because I've unfinished business and I got to put us in the tournament. Yep. I'm going to return and chase a Big Ten and national championship. Yep. Like, I just can't get over it. I cannot stop thinking about it this week, because it's like, who does that, right? You know, how often an athlete that says such incredibly bold words and then goes out and backs them up. I'm just in awe.
Yeah. Well, and he's inviting, he invites it. You know, I mean, I always remember like reading about LeBron James, and he's like on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he's 16 years old. And, you know, everyone said he didn't invite it. He didn't ask for any of this. He's going to be the center of attention, all the comparisons to Jordan, everything else. Like, and, you know, people almost felt bad for him that he had, you know, this much of a spotlight on him. Like, Io wants that. Like, Io has been his, you know, from day one, in his own sort of hype machine, and has completely, completely lived up to it. Yep. And I think that is what invited a lot of, to your point earlier, I think some of those claims are probably what invited a lot of like this, you know, this like irrational anger towards him whenever he's down for a while, or whenever he's not playing well as a freshman, or whatever it might be. Yep. But, you know, you look at the body of work and he's delivered on everything. And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't know there aren't many athletes, I think, across college sports that have done something similar and delivered on it in a way, in such a big way, too.
Yep. I mean, I wrote that thing, and it was just a headline I added to a post 2 weeks ago of Long Live the King, and, like, that's how I feel right now. Like, I feel like someone's kingdom who, like, may he reign forever. Like, you know, I am just, I have such reverence for the kid. Like, I just, it's just of what he has accomplished so far, and what's the potential of the next 6 weeks. Like, I just,
yep.
No, yeah. I don't know what to think.
I always remember watching, you know, you'll watch like the 20-year-old kid who left high school and went straight to the NBA and is just dominating the NBA at like the age of 20. And you always play like the what if game, like what if he was in college now? Mm-hmm. What would he be doing? You know, I mean, I truly think Io would be getting, you know, like 12 a night for some NBA team right now, and we'd be sitting there going, you know, he would just be absolutely dominating Nebraska if he were at Illinois right now. And like, now we actually get to see that. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of the next 6 weeks and, you know, just hope for the best.
Well, now I'm not going to sleep, but it doesn't matter. I'm already in East Lansing. I just got to wake up by 6 p.m. So, all right. I thank you for doing this. We'll have to do it again after the season and spring football and everything else. But, yeah,
absolutely.
Man, 6 weeks or I cannot wait.
Yep, I can't either. Thanks for having me.
All right, good. Talk to you soon.